The last newsletter, you may have recalled there being a sermon advertised different from this, and that's because I wrote myself in circles on that one, and I had two micro sermons, but I didn't have a full sermon, and then my attitude started to sour, so I started on scratch from a different topic. So today, I've titled it The Magic of Christmas, with both an exclamation point and a question mark. The Magic of Christmas, you know, or the Magic of Christmas, that's what we're going to deal with today. So let's take a moment in our time machine, head back to December the 24th, 1914, in Belgium. A British machine gunner named Bruce Barnes' father, who would later become a famous cartoonist, wrote about what happened in his memoirs. He was part of the 1st Battalion of the Royal Warwickshire Regiment. They were crouched in an earthen trench, wet and shivering. Trench was about 3 feet wide, about 3 feet deep. After 5 months of fighting, World War I had stalled out in this way, in the form of trench warfare, mostly as a defense against the new military technologies of the day, like machine guns. Barnes' father wrote this: "Here I was in this horrible clay cavity, miles and miles from home, cold, wet through, and covered with mud. There didn't seem the slightest chance of leaving, except in an ambulance." Then around 10 p.m. on Christmas Eve day, Barnes' father recalled hearing a noise. Here's how he described it: "I listened. Away across the field, among the dark shadows beyond, I could hear the murmur of voices." He turned to a fellow soldier in a trench and he said, "Do you hear the bocces, or botch, B-O-C-H-E-S? That's what he wrote in his memoir. Where that comes from, it's based on the French word for cabbage. And that's what they were using as a slang for the Germans at the time. So he says to his fellow soldier, "You hear the botches kicking up that racket over there?" And his fellow soldier said, "Yeah, I hear them. They've been at it a while now." "Well, what's the ruckus?" "The Germans were singing Christmas carols." Some of the British soldiers began to sing back. And Barnes' father continued in his memoir saying, "Suddenly, we heard a confused shouting from the other side. We all stopped to listen. The shout came again. The voice was from an enemy soldier speaking in English with a strong German accent. He was saying, 'Come over here.' One of the British sergeants responded saying, 'You come halfway, I come halfway.' And they did. And then another person, and then another nervously climbed out of the trenches and entered the no man's land between the two trenches." And Barnes' father recorded in his memoir that he struggled to believe what he was seeing. Here they were, the actual practical soldiers of the German army. There was not an atom of hate on either side. They exchanged songs, handshakes, kind words, cigarettes, wine, snacks, whatever they had to share. And this happened up and down hundreds of miles of the war front. And many soldiers wrote home about it. Here's an account from another soldier, a British 19-year-old named Henry Williamson, and he was writing to his mother on Boxing Day. As you know, in Britain, Boxing Day is the day after Christmas. Here's what he wrote: "Dear Mother, I am writing from the trenches. It is 11 o'clock in the morning. Beside me is a coke fire. Opposite me, a dugout with wet straw on it. The ground is sloppy in the actual trench, but frozen everywhere else. In my mouth is a pipe presented by the Princess Mary. In the pipe is tobacco. 'Of course,' you say, 'but wait, in the pipe is German tobacco.' 'Ha ha,' you say, 'from a prisoner or found in a captured trench?' 'Oh dear, no, from a German soldier. Yes, a live German soldier from his own trench. Yesterday, the British and Germans met and shook hands in the ground between the trenches and exchanged souvenirs and shook hands. Yes, all day Christmas Day, and even as I write. Marvelous, isn't it?" By January, reports of what had happened there on the front began to show up in newspapers in a variety of countries and multiple languages. In the U.S., we were most aware of what happened between British and German soldiers. Obviously, language made that easier. We were taking British newspaper accounts and putting them in our own newspapers. But these same kind of truces happened between French and Italian troops who were facing off against German and Austro-Hungarian forces. It also happened on the Eastern Front between Austro-Hungarian forces and Russian forces. So from all of this international press coverage, the Christmas armistice miracle of World War I was born. Poems have been written about it, songs, films. It even shows up occasionally in TV episodes in English and in French and in German. And in fact, the Nazis even used this as propaganda. In Nazi propaganda, they showed German soldiers wanting to have a Christmas armistice and putting candles and Christmas trees, and then the mean British shot them up and shot the candles off the Christmas trees, right? So they turned that into Germans are nice and wanted peace, and the British are mean and nasty. Well, what was then known as the Great War, the war to end all wars, a conflict whose technology was producing casualties that had not been seen before, it was truly a global conflict. It involved all of Europe and their empires. Well, that war, it had stopped on Christmas Eve. Can we explain what happened there without having some idea or notion about the magic of Christmas? Without some kind of a feeling that that moment in the calendar is special? When I've been told this story, this is the story that I've heard. It's a miracle, right? Christmas Eve, shooting stopped. It was a truce. So if that's all the story we know, it seems pretty difficult to explain it without pointing to something about the magic of the season or the miracle of Christmas. Something special or magical does seem to be happening here on Christmas Eve 1914. And it's not just the Christmas truce. We have all kinds of other things telling us that this moment in our calendar is special, right? It's the most wonderful time of the year. Well, let's take a closer look at the Christmas truce and the magic of Christmas. World War I had a phenomenon that they at the time called live and let live. Trench warfare meant one thing different about World War I from other wars. It meant the enemy was within shouting distance. Hey, you want to stop shooting at each other? Sure. So what happened on Christmas was in fact not unique at all. It had happened throughout the war. And it bugged the heck out of all of the brass, all of the officers, because as soon as they'd walk away, all of the people beneath them would be like, hey, let's stop shooting. We're not being watched right now. Okay, let's work it out. And then you'd work it out with the other side. Normally, ceasefires like that, right, they happen at the top levels. The diplomats and the generals work it out, and then it goes down to the bottom. In this case, it started at the bottom, and it never got to the top. So when we take a bigger look at the war, what happened at the Christmas truce wasn't actually very remarkable or magical at all. The story of the Christmas truce is far more a story about World War I and what happened on a regular basis in World War I than it was something special or magical about Christmas. Because even during that Christmas truce, when I heard the story, I thought it was like every soldier everywhere stopped shooting. That's not how it happened. It was spotty. Even as those truces occurred here and there, they could hear gunfire elsewhere. So it was local. It was not a generalized armistice everywhere because it wasn't coming from the top. It was just being worked out at the bottom. So for most of these people, it was just another day on the front line where some groups of human beings worked out something that was of benefit to both sides, not trying to kill each other. So in this case, perhaps the magic didn't come from Christmas after all, but from the magic of cooperative behavior through live and let live. So in that sense, the Christmas truce is closer to being any other day of trench warfare on the front lines than it is necessarily a magical moment that only could have happened at Christmas. So I'm guiding us here, pointing us here towards a paradox. On the one hand, Christmas is magical, at least to some people some of the time. Christmas did prompt some people to stop trying to kill one another in a world war. More than one-third of Americans travel at least 100 miles at Christmas. 7% of us travel more than 1,000 miles. That's a lot of trouble to go to, and we do it because it's a holiday. 20% of engagements happen in December. We're generally more generous with our time and with our money at Christmas. So clearly, in many ways, late December is exceptional to the rest of the calendar. It does impact our behavior. On the other hand, for others of us, sometimes Christmas is closer to just being another day. World War I had many truces. Life doesn't stop being real just because it's Christmas. We don't stop having challenges or struggles because it's a holiday. Sometimes it's difficult to be merry or even pay attention to the fact that it's a holiday when you're dealing with grief or anger, loneliness, depression, addiction, or a combination of very complicated emotions. So for others, this season is a painful reminder of loved ones who are no longer with us to celebrate with. And this is why more and more UU congregations for about the last decade or so have been adding Blue Christmas services to their offerings. When Christmas arrives, we bring our full selves and our full lives to it. Joy and pain, things that are heartening, things that are disheartening, the good, the bad, and everything in between. So sometimes Christmas is magical and it can do things like create a truce during a world war. Sometimes it's just another day, one truce among many truces. Sometimes it can be even more complicated with conflicting emotions. So what I want to do now is to create a safe space for all of us to share our thoughts and our feelings about any and all of that. So is your Christmas looking to be merry? Is your Christmas looking to be blue? Or in between? Whatever it is, it's okay. There are only right ways to share today. So where you're at is where you're at, and that's okay. The calendar keeps marching on just as life does. And sometimes life and a holiday can coincide in a desirable way, and sometimes the two of them collide in an undesirable way. Each of us has the freedom to make the holiday whatever it is that we need it to be. So I invite any and all of us to now share whatever thoughts we have stirring with us and whatever feelings we have within us about the approaching holiday. Annie, were you?
I guess I want to start with a question. Do you know if the December 1914 was the, since it made the news so much, was it the first time it happened?
No, it wasn't the first truce.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
It was just picked up by the news because it was Christmas, right?
Oh, I gotcha. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I would note that the truces got less and less common as the war dragged on. Christmas time here, the war was only 5 months old. As more and more casualties showed up and people got a little bit more embittered at the enemy, the truces got less common.
There were similar Christmas truces in the Civil War.
I did not know that.
I had a joy and concern this morning related to this very issue. 4 years ago, some of you may remember that I brought a concern because my step-grandson had been in a horrible car crash, and he did indeed die on Christmas Eve. This year, his younger brother, who had just finished his RN and was starting to work as a nurse, went snowboarding and broke his femur bone last week. He had surgery yesterday. They put a rod in his leg, and he's going to be okay. But needless to say, it's been a really stressful time for the family. So we can have all kinds of things going on Christmas.
Okay, I'm going to give this a whirl. The word magic, whether you're talking about sleight of hand magic, magic with a C, magic with a K, it's all about focus, intention, and energy. And our connections to each other are all about focus and connection. And if you declared the 22nd of February ISIS Day and we all gave to charities and we all reached out to the people that we loved, that day would be magic too. So while my tradition, Rick, growing up was staunchly Christian, which is probably not a big surprise, the story of the Christ child is one of the great love stories in mythology in a religion that is largely based in fear. So people gravitate to that, of course, if that is their tradition. But I think we misunderstand that we are not magic all of the time, with the capacity to be magic all the time. We just seem to focus in this season where it's a magical season from a solstice standpoint. There's a lot of energy around that. It's a magical season where we reach out in the dark to the people that we care about, and that's where the magic is.
Thank you.
I'll take a chance. I'm not, Cindy and I are not too energized about Christmas this year. Locally, I mean, we're getting into putting cards together and thinking about friends and our relationships, and I think it's going to be that kind of Christmas, which is every Christmas that you think about past experiences and so forth, but I think we at the church can do better. I think we got to put the decorations up here pretty soon and help us feel more positive about what's coming.
Some of you know that I have kind of a science engineering background. I have a BS in physics and licensed professional mechanical engineer. But there's very little that I believe absolutely, and there is very little that I disbelieve absolutely. And that's actually very scientific, especially in the medical community, but a lot of other places too. There's an attitude, well, if you haven't proved it's true, it's not. And that's not scientific at all. You cannot know, and that's kind of a problem with Western philosophy, that things are true or false. Well, do you still beat your wife? No, so that's a question that you might say is nil, makes no sense. And the other thing people don't understand about science, a lot of people don't, is that they think it's coming to some great singular truth. And it does move that direction, but every time we answer a big question in science, we create two or three or four more questions. So it's really expanding how much we know we don't know. And, you know, I can see no indication that's ever going to stop. So I think there's always going to be open questions. And then if you come back to some of the other sciences, vibration theory and quantum mechanics and emergent systems, a lot of things are just unpredictable. So it's never like we're going to be at a place where we know what's going to happen in the future. So anybody else? There we go.
Joel, I was thinking about this in anticipation of today, but just, I don't know that I have a very blue Christmas, but I think I have a blue-tinted Christmas. So a lot of magic, I think, having children who experience the magic of the holiday season very differently, where I'm like, oh God, we gotta put on the lights again. And they're like, the lights are coming out, you know? Different levels of excitement for lights going out on the house. But it's always a difficult time of year, I think, for people who, there's a lot of pressure around engaging with family members. And when you have family members that you have set boundaries with within your life, there's a lot of pressure to just let those boundaries slide. When, if you look at it from a holistic viewpoint, those boundaries that you set were there for a reason, and those reasons didn't go away because of the holidays. There is the collective magic, but it doesn't necessarily change that person's behavior. And so it feels like there's always that constant message, you know, sometimes hidden and sometimes very blunt from friends or other family members that are like, well, what are you doing with your mom this holiday? What are you doing with your dad? What are you doing with this, you know, sibling? And when the answer is I'm not, there's guilt that they put on you then to say, well, but it's the holidays. How can you have the holidays without that? And so I think it's a very difficult, you know, kind of almost a minefield to navigate when you're trying to maintain your boundaries, but there's additional guilt on it. And so as somebody who has had to create some very strict boundaries with some family members in my life, even when I'm enjoying the holidays, there's still kind of that blue tint to it.
For sure, yeah. And many of us naively assume that, oh, well, Uncle Bill won't get drunk and talk about Trump all day to this time, right? Whoever a person is, it doesn't matter if it's Christmas or a wedding reception or what have you, they're probably going to be themselves, right? That holiday magic is not going to make any of our problems go away. Those family members are still going to be who they are and so on. So you either need to maintain the boundary or just make your peace with your boundaries will be violated in X, Y, Z ways. Mm-hmm. Let's transition from this talk to just joys and concerns more broadly. I put the two things back to back since it's sharing and microphone time.